Welcome to the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Thank you for joining us. My name is Bob Griswold.
Mary Griswold.
Kim Fink.
Glenn Fink.
Pat Park.
Chief Patrick Gallagher.
Alan Harrop.
Well, welcome everybody. Now, Mary, you have a place.
We have a special guest today, New Bern Police Chief Pat Gallagher. And we're going to ask him a few questions about what's going on in New Bern and anything he wants to tell us about what's going on in the department. And the first question I'm going to ask you is, we're all hearing a lot about the open border and the dangers of that. Does that impact New Bern at all?
So the answer to that, the easiest answer to that is yes. And it impacts New Bern like it impacts every community in this country, whether there's two houses and a Dollar General, or if it's New York City, which has 7 million people. The issues associated with open borders has so much more to do with just immigration, and I know that's a hot topic, and a lot of we as a society like to discuss that, pros and cons, whatever the case may be, but that's but a small piece to what I'm seeing in my industry. And what we have seen is such an uptick in the amount of fentanyl overdoses that is occurring. Now, we started tracking heightened overdose incidences right around 2016. And what had transpired between the years, several years before, but more so picking up after that, was the opioid epidemic that our country has seen just exploded. And we in the industry were wondering, what is going on? Because rare was the heroin overdose of the 70s and 80s. It happened, but it wasn't frequent. Opioid is both legal and illegal. Many of the addicts that we saw were those that were addicted to pain medication, mm-hmm. Percocet, oxycodone, those types of opioid-based pain medications. And rightfully so, there was a need to control that because there were quite a number of pharmaceutical companies and doctors that were just describing these like it was candy. And when they started pulling those back, the addict, who is a legitimate addict, was trying to find a substitute for the opioid that they needed, and heroin is but one of those options. Heroin is an expensive product. Fentanyl is not. Fentanyl is by far a much cheaper option, and it's more potent. And so what we have experienced in not just the criminal justice system, but in the health system and throughout our country, is the amounts of this fentanyl that is produced not even in Central America or South America, but it's coming in through China. And the ability to make a huge profit on the side of the drug dealer and the drug dealer industry is huge monies. And so we are not talking about pharmaceutical grade products. We're talking about people that are estimating when they're cutting their product for distribution. And all you have to be is a couple grams off, and what you have is an overdose. And that is a huge problem. It's a supply and demand type of equation, and we in law enforcement do a very good job, as far as I'm concerned. I know I'm tooting my own horn, but we do a good job of arresting a lot of people. But we're never going to arrest ourselves out of this problem.
No.
Now, the fentanyl itself is not a standalone product. I guess there's a lot of things laced with the fentanyl.
Oh, yes. You couldn't take straight fentanyl.
Yeah, and so it comes in a lot of hidden forms. I guess there's
is
some.
Is it a pill or a shot or how is it?
It's anything you want it to be, apparently.
Those pills that they're marketing to kids are all candy colors. Those are all laced with fentanyl.
Okay.
And then I guess the other thing that I would add is, I guess the effect of just touching it from the officer's perspective, yeah. from your law enforcement perspective, mm-hmm. you have to be ready to counteract that immediately, apparently.
Yeah. Fair number of officers have to Narcan themselves. And many departments, just like ours, have mandated that when we handle an unknown substance, there has to be two officers or two staff members present. Every one of our officers patrols with Narcan. We have that, and we deploy it. It's not every day, but I would say about 3 to 4 times a week,
wow.
an officer is administering Narcan to somebody who is overdosing. And oftentimes, these are frequent flyers. These are people we have Narcan before.
Oh. So is it fair to say that the impact of the open borders has increased the cost to the city based on policing, on the Narcan, on gang violence, on human trafficking? Everything is connected and interlaced.
I would say the policing component and the purchasing of Narcan, which is about $57 a dose, is really a nominal fee. It's not that substantial. The biggest cost are those associated, and I'd hate to say unintended consequences of addiction, but at this point we almost can say if you're an addict, these are the things you're going to do. And if you run out of your own money, you steal somebody else's, or you're stealing things and you're pawning them. And that's at the low end. What is the associated cost with hospitalization, with people that don't have insurance and all of these types of outcomes? But the biggest impact that I see, right, is the organized crime. And we're not talking about the mafia, which is associated with this in some kind, the MS-13s and all of those are legitimate concerns. But we're talking about the low-end distributors and dealers. The dealers are your 16, 17, 18, 20, 21, 22-year-olds that are looking to make a lot of fast money very quickly, and the amount of violence that is associated with that is immense. And I think a lot of people would be very surprised to learn how many times that violence results in gunfire in beautiful New Bern.
Mm-hmm. Chief, I want to make a comment about your point about concomitant costs to drugs. I used to be a prosecutor in New Mexico. We had a lot of drug cases. We were on I-40, and mm-hmm. it's one of the where the mules are. Mm-hmm. We used to get a lot of them on the interstate. But like you said, a lot of the drugs were being sold by residents. And so we had an active drug-using population. The parents would come to me and ask, is there something you can do about my child? Because they're stealing from me, and I can't handle it anymore. And I would tell them, well, we can arrest them, we can put them in jail, and then send them to rehab. They do that, they get out of rehab, they go right back to what they do, but when they run out of money, they steal it from others. Mm-hmm. And I used to hear the libertarian argument all the time, why are you busting people for drugs? They're not hurting anybody. And I would tell them, well, yeah, they are. They're stealing from everybody around them to maintain their drug habit. And within families, they're abusing their children, they're abusing their wives. And so the society is absorbing all these costs while these idiots think, well, if you're a heroin addict, you're not bothering anybody. It's your body. We should just let you do it. Well, that would be one thing if it was true, but it's not true.
That's absolutely, you're absolutely correct in your analysis. This is not without precedent. In this country, at one time during the Industrial Revolution, everything was legal. Everything. There were no laws against anything that was associated with narcotics. And it became very apparent that our society was collapsing because again, we're talking about an industrial society that we have moved from an agrarian life to big factories, big machines, and parents were doping their children so that they would sleep all day. It was just a disaster. And government stepped in and said, for purposes of creating a need to protect the fabric of our society, and I keep using that terminology, but it's correct, we have to pass these laws. And I am sympathetic to the libertarian that says, look, I'm not harming anyone. Well, you're harming yourself, but I get it. I get the libertarian perspective. Let me harm myself. Alcoholism is every bit as prevalent, and how many people die from the misuse of alcohol through crashes and DWIs and liver failures and all of that. I get all of that. We tried banning alcohol. In fact, they passed an amendment only to have to pass yet another amendment to eliminate that one. So the solution isn't, let's just forget about it. And I don't think the solution is, well, let's just legalize it. Because what we've seen in places like, especially Oregon, Seattle, a lot of those West Coast states, and they realize this is horrible. And I'll end with this. People that will tell you that decriminalizing drugs will drive out the black market. Oh, nay, nay. No. In fact, the black market is advances their profits even higher because government's going to tax everything. Go ask yourself why it costs $10 for a pack of cigarettes. The black market will always undercut the government taxes.
Yeah. In California, they have those big marijuana farms that are out in the boonies that have all these, you know, like sharpened sticks and like Vietnam to protect their farm. And those are all black market.
Thanks for listening to our sponsors and supporters. This is a CCTA Wake Up Call show.
Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair is the transmission physician in the New Bern area. If you're experiencing transmission problems, call Charles Grover at 252-637-2399 or stop by the shop on 17 South in New Bern. Torque can install a new or reconditioned transmission, or they can rebuild your transmission if that's what you prefer. See Torque for a variety of minor automotive repairs like brakes, tune-ups, and water pump. You can count on Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair.
The God and Country Christian Alliance has a simple mission, but it is a profound one. They want to inform and educate the public on issues of moral and political concern. They want to restore the Judeo-Christian values upon which this nation was founded to all levels of government. And they want to encourage and activate pro-family voters. Simple, but not easy. The God and Country Christian Alliance meets the third Monday of every month at Moore's Barbecue on MLK in New Bern. Meetings begin promptly at 7 p.m. and end by 8:30. To enjoy dinner with the group before the meeting, arrive between 6 and 6:30. Both the food and the company are good. Meetings include speakers and discussion, and their annual banquets are legendary. Join them on the third Monday of each month for a refreshingly candid view of the world and our place in it.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? They're people like you, a photographer, someone that ran their own business, someone retired from the military, just people in the community that love this country and have a desire to do their part to lower taxes and shrink government, to protect individual liberty, and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. We welcome you to come out to a meeting. If you like what you see and hear, there's a place where you can contribute to the cause. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. The group meets every third Tuesday at Stanley Hall Ballroom in downtown New Bern to enjoy a fantastic speaker and report on CCTA activity since the last meeting. If you've been disappointed with rising taxes and government intrusion, don't just complain. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
Welcome back, and thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Mary.
I just want to add on to what was said about the idea that legalizing some of these drugs is a good idea. A number of years ago, Oregon decriminalized the possession of heroin, methamphetamine, and cocaine, and the experiment resulted in disaster. The first year they did it, there were 824 fatal overdoses. When the new law went into effect, there were 1,100. So it didn't cut down on the deaths. It didn't give anyone a reason to want to get off drugs because what they were doing was legal, so it wasn't a problem. And it just degraded their society more than it needed to be degraded.
Yeah, that's interesting, Mary, as you talk about the impact of punishment. So we're truly talking about punishment versus no punishment for an act, a crime, okay? And if you look historically, it's interesting what's going on with China and fentanyl. China is supplying the chemicals. In fact, it's my understanding that there are facilities in Mexico that are staffed by Chinese that are actually compositing these drugs into forms, the fentanyl in particular. Okay. If you look back historically, the British did the same thing to China.
Opium wars.
During
yes.
the 1800s, there was a balance of payment problem between England and China, particularly over England wanting buying a lot of tea, and they didn't have anything to trade with the Chinese with. So they actually started doing what the Chinese are doing to us. They started infiltrating and putting drugs into the Chinese culture, and they created all these opium dens. That time it was opium. And it was destroying the Chinese culture. It was destroying their civilization. There came a point at which the Chinese got to the point where they needed and took action to stop it. And what they did, they implemented draconian punishments, including the death penalty. And that's how they stopped it. Within a few years, they eliminated the opium problem because they got serious about it. Now, I'm not recommending we get to go to that point. But we cannot go down the other rabbit hole thinking that by not having penalties or minimizing the penalties, you're going to reduce it, because it's the opposite. Human behavior is controlled more by negative consequences than it is by allowing people, because it's something they can't control. Once they're addicted, and that's how they see it, it's out of their control. You got to stop it from getting to them. If we don't do that, we're going to continue to have our younger generation addicted and dying every year.
I'm going to add a few things to that. We spent some time recently with a college student who explained to us that 90% of his friends were vaping. They were addicted to nicotine. We've gotten rid of smoking, but now we've got kids just as addicted to nicotine as if they were smoking. And what I would like to see with drugs, and just for the record, I'd like to see this with abortion too, I would like to see a cultural change. I would like to see somehow get the idea across from the time our kids are little kids that this is unacceptable behavior, that this is something you don't want to try. I mean, look at what they did with smoking. In the 1970s, if you walked into a restaurant, there was a cloud of blue smoke about 4 feet high, and there were ashtrays on every table. And then the movies stopped showing smokers, and the magazines stopped with the smoking ads, and the airplanes started restricting it on shorter flights. And then you had smoking zones in the airports. It was about a 50-year process.
But excuse me, Mary, that wasn't a cultural change. That was forced by the government.
Not all of it.
Yeah. Those were laws that required the restaurants to have non-smoking zones, which is ridiculous because everybody
the smoke goes.
Would be on
I
this
know
side,
the smoke goes everywhere.
And the non-smokers would be on this side. It's ridiculous. It's the government that stopped them from being able to advertise cigarettes on TV. It's the government that requires certain things to be on the packages. It's the government that stopped smoking on airplanes. So this is not a cultural change. This is imposed from the top.
It was imposed from the top, but it did work.
But people are still smoking.
But not as much as they used to.
They're just not smoking somewhere where, you know, they're standing outside the building, so you have to walk through the barrage of cigarette smoke.
But it became socially less acceptable.
Well, because they were making it impossible for you to smoke where you would normally be able to smoke. I used to be a smoker back then, and we could smoke in our classrooms.
Oh, yeah.
At Old Dominion.
I remember in high school there was a designated smoking area.
Yeah.
I graduated in late 70s, and we had a smoking area at school. Matter of fact, all of the trucks had rifles in the back window, too, but we were in a farming hunting community. But you
and,
know.
And in the Navy, I started smoking so I could get off the flight deck, because you needed to have a reason to get off the flight deck.
Hmm. But we made the change. Now, can we do that with... smoking is an addiction, just like drugs are an addiction. Can we do that with
drugs?
Well,
first of all, you'd have to convince people that marijuana is addictive.
That's true. And there is evidence that it is.
Yes, there is. But does the culture accept that?
No.
Well, Chief? We got to get serious about this fentanyl issue.
It does not.
No, it does not.
We're losing 100,000 people plus a year in this country, fentanyl, and we're allowing it to continue. We know where it's coming from. It's coming from China. We need to get serious with China. And it needs to be a policy that they pay a stiff price if they continue this.
Well, as long
and
as
the drug cartels in Mexico.
The border's open, Alan.
But the point is, it needs to be addressed in a serious manner.
But I think drug
cartels need to be eliminated.
Mary's got a point, too, with the culture, though, because there wouldn't be a fentanyl market if we didn't have a population that wanted it. Like the chief said, it's supply and demand. If it's not the fentanyl, what will it be? It'll be something else.
But as we found out, or China found out, and so on and so forth, human beings have a tendency to go towards something that is pleasurable and addictive. You're not going to change human nature. You have got to limit and restrict those things that are deadly to them or are most destructive. You're not going to eliminate the desire of human beings to try to feel better. And, you know, some people, it helps their mood or it helps they feel happy or whatever. You're not going to change that. But you can change, in my opinion, these things like fentanyl, but you got to get serious about it. And we have not been serious about it.
I'm going to move on now. I think we have.
Well, I guess say, folks, these are some of the conflicts that we deal with as a, quote, free society.
Yes, that is true.
So I would like to make one point that I often hear, and I've heard it here today several times. The term legalizing is, we shouldn't use that term, because even in places like Oregon, Washington State, Colorado, where they... state legislatures in those states have decriminalized it, and people think, well, it's legal. It's not. It's still illegal under the federal law.
Level. Exactly.
You would not want, and I would hope that reasonable people would agree with me, one, you don't want your police department to be high on cocaine and other substances. You don't want the bus driver who's taking your kids. You don't want the airplane pilot.
The doctor.
Introducing these substances creates yet another problem that a lot of people don't understand. We, as law enforcement, have the ability to prove if somebody is under the influence of alcohol, because there is a breathalyzer ability to, and the courts have taken judicial notice that, yes, we will accept these findings. And if we can't get a blood sample, a breath sample, then we can get a blood sample, but that's more time-consuming, more expensive. We can't do that with these other substances. I cannot determine if somebody is under the influence of marijuana simply by smelling it in their car and looking at their eyes. There's no test for that. Literally have to go to a magistrate and get a search warrant to get their blood. It is incredibly taxing to go down that path. And so if we are allowing our society, and to use your, or to dovetail off of your cultural conversation and say, oh, it's all out there for you to enjoy. Well, when people start enjoying it, they're leaving their homes, and now it's impacting the rest of us. Mm-hmm. And how do we enforce that?
Wow, yeah. That's true. We're going to move along, and I'm going to ask the chief a question. Oops. And the question is, what do you see as the three most important challenges facing New Bern right now?
So I'll start with this violent crime. Violent crime are one of the almost immediate conversations the sheriff and I had. I was the chief here for 2 days, and I'm in his office, and we're having a conversation, and I knew that in order to impact the destructive nature of violent crime, I had to have a partner, and I needed to use as a force multiplier the Craven County deputies, along with my own staff and any other law enforcement entity I could leverage. And we both agreed that violent crime, especially those that involve drug dealing and gang members and those that use firearms to settle scores or to engage in the types of arguments that we see, we have to impact that. And so for the past 3 years, that's exactly what we've been doing. We've been partnering not only with our own staff, but also with the federal entities. So two other things that I would say that are a concern is keeping up with growth. That we're 30,000, I'll grant you that. I mean, we're not growing as fast as we're going to grow, but we have to keep pace with the size of our community and ensuring that we have the ability to meet the demands, not just in a law enforcement perspective, but also all the other intrinsic components that law enforcement does as a community caretaker and what we do. And then after the break, I can answer a third one.
Okay.
Very good. Folks, we're going to take another quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. This is a CCTA Wake Up Call show.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in New Bern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swansboro, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
Wake Up Call airs Saturday at 6 a.m., some days at 11 a.m. and 8 p.m.
Y'all ready for this? The County Compass is a rapidly growing, free weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news, coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. this Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout Eastern North Carolina. Pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
Welcome back, and thank you again for listening to the sponsors and supporters. Chief, you had a third item that you were going to bring in.
I did, and I think every sheriff and chief in this country would pat me on the back and say thank you for bringing this one up, because we all share the same issue, and that is recruitment and retention. Recruiting young talent to do a job that many will say is thankless. And I would not be one of those that says it's thankless. There's a lot of people in a lot of our community that thanks our police just like they do veterans. But it is hard to sell a young person, look, we want you to serve your community. But by the way, there is a movement to take qualified immunity away. There is a movement to put your face on the next CNN episode as a racist cop who has done his or her job, but the outcome of a use of force, which happens every day. People just don't want to comply with lawful orders, and then force is used, and it's difficult. And although I concede that a college degree is not a mandatory requirement for law enforcement, we're getting to that professionalism where we want those educated minded type of recruits. But if you're not going to pay for a college-educated profession, you're not going to get a college-educated applicant. Mm-hmm. And so it is important to understand why it is so critical that not only you hire the right candidate. A lot of people want to be police officers, and we say, no, thank you. We do psychological backgrounds and personnel backgrounds on a lot of people, and we just simply say, you're not the right fit for us.
I have a question. I used to teach criminal justice courses at ECU. Are you getting candidates from East Carolina?
No, we're not. And we do have a fair number of students from ECU that want internships, and I think that's wonderful. But for all intents and purposes, we are not getting that level. Now, those that have that college degree, and I qualified a little bit, and this is not a knock on New Bern. In fact, I love this community, and I grew up in Northern Virginia, right outside of Washington, D.C., and I spent the past three decades in Virginia Beach, so I know what it's like to be in a populated area. I don't want to live there anymore. I love it here. But young college-educated people that have a lot of college debt will likely go to places like Raleigh and Charlotte and bigger
money.
Bigger money. You know, there's an advantage to try to seek that federal law enforcement position, and to come to New Bern with that type of pedigree is not something that we're seeing. Now, we do see people transitioning from the military, which I think is a wonderful opportunity for them. You know, we value our veterans, and we think that that's a great stepping stone. But it's not just the recruitment part, it's the retention. I lost, or I'm losing, a crime analyst who we put a lot of effort into providing her with the type of training we want as a crime analyst, because we want to be evidence-based and intelligence-led in what we do. We want to use best practices. And so we sent this employee to Florida, one of the best crime analysis training courses in the country, to get her certified. And now she's incredibly marketable. Mm. And so she has taken an opportunity to advance herself personally. But now I've got to find another person, which we will do. We will give another person that opportunity. But I only have a finite amount of money in my budget for that. when budget season, by the way, nobody wants taxes raised. I get that. But at some point, you know, the economic forces that apply to all of us when we go to Harris Teeter, not to plug Harris Teeter, but those market forces there apply even to government when we're trying to, you know, stretch those dollars.
You know, as you're looking at that recruitment thing, I grew up in the New York City area, and I look at the dilemma or the conflict that the officers must feel up there, because they're trying to enforce the law. They'll bring someone to the legal system or whatever else, and that person, the offender, is going to be on the street faster than the officers on the street. And I see that from both the law enforcement and having been on the fire department, I also see that in the way that you treat firefighters as to whether do you follow your moral code about going and saving somebody, or do you follow a certain a written code that says, well, you cannot roll the truck unless you've got so many men and you've got so many, and you see some situations where you're really in a moral dilemma, and the police see that moral dilemma. Do I enforce the law that I know is there, or do I enforce the legal, some dictate that somebody says, well, don't touch them, don't do this?
Well, you're talking about the officer's discretion. The officers have a lot of discretion about whether or not to write a ticket. And if you watch these cop shows on TV, a lot of people, particularly on the traffic offenses, you can't write them a ticket for everything.
No, you can't.
Have an uprising.
No, you would.
Because whenever you stop somebody, they probably deserve about 6 tickets. Cracked windshield, no seatbelt, et cetera.
So imagine these two forces coming together, and what pinched in between is that young officer that is just wanting to do his or her best job. On the one side, you have the pressures of a society that is promoted by much of the liberal media that we're going to defund police. We don't need you. We don't want you. You're the problem. And then internally, you have the old timers that say, we're going to depolice. Now, that's a difference. Depolicing is, I'm a police officer. My gut tells me that I need to engage and be part of the proactive response to suspicious activity. So I'm going to get out of my car and I'm going to confront somebody who needs to be confronted. It's 3:00 in the morning. It's behind the Circle K. What is this person doing? And so the younger officers are being told by older officers, there's no upside for you on this. A lot of this is occurring in big union states up north, where they go, don't stay in your car. Unless you get a call, or unless you're dispatched, there's just problems here. And so on the one side, I can't control the talking heads on TV, but I can impact my officers and say, you're doing this for a particular reason, and we want you to get out of the car. We want you to engage your community. And sometimes that engagement is just, hey, I'm Officer Gallagher. You know, I notice you're back here. I'm just trying to figure out what's going on. Try to engage where it is appropriate for you to engage. And, you know, to be quite honest, I tell my officers all the time, yeah, your car, just walk around, talk to people. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You don't have, you know, this isn't the powers of government. This is just being a good neighbor.
Mm-hmm. Some of this stuff goes back to what Mayor was saying earlier with culture. Growing up, the policemen were always the good guys. They were the heroes. They were the ones that were going to save you from the boogeyman. And then you, as growing up and how culture has changed now, you go into the communities where crime is rampant. The police is the enemy because they're going to catch my dad, my brother, my uncle, who's done something wrong. And they're actually taught to be wary of the policeman. And I think when you meet somebody and you've already got that internal angst, it doesn't matter what the situation is, it can escalate quickly.
I'll say this. Go ahead, Mary. I was just going to comment on...
I walked into Dunkin' Donuts in Taberna one morning, and they were having a Meet the Police event.
Yeah, coffee with a cop.
And that was wonderful. And I was really impressed that the manager did that. Mm-hmm. And it was well, I mean, there were a lot of people there. There was a crowd there. There were a lot of people interacting.
But you're at Taberna.
Yes, I think there needs to make, I need to make this statement as a white chief who's lived in the South practically my entire life. White people trust the police. There's no question. And there's a certain segment of the African American and Hispanic communities, and we can throw in the LGBT community as well, that they have not always been treated with the constitutional rights that they have been afforded. And unfortunately, that Jim Crow history, which we, you know, just like Holocaust survivors, we have Jim Crow survivors that have literally lived through this. Mm-hmm. Now, I check my calendar. It's 2024. We don't live in that society anymore. But there's, you know, you can't turn a battleship around.
That's
overnight.
What I mean about that preconceived angst.
Yeah,
and you know,
so
it's already there.
It's our responsibility to use community policing efforts to be part of the solution. Now, a lot of the problems in the inner cities, in places like Duffy Field, are not the result of law enforcement acts. It's a result of a long-term problem that we've yet to crack the code on. And so I don't point my finger and I don't blame any one person, but I do say that our job is every opportunity we have to engage members of our community that do not trust us to give us a reason to trust us. And that's, look, I tell my young officers all the time, you're not a racist. I understand that. But your grandfather might have been one. And you're not your grandfather. Mm. So let the next generation know what you're about. And we can turn the opinions of many by simply being as professional as we can and understanding what the cultural differences are and being cognizant of those.
I will mention that on May 21st, the CCTA is hosting a Back the Blue banquet at Copper Ridge on the Neuse. And if you think you might be interested in coming, you can send an email to Mary at cctaxpayers.com and I will set you up with tickets. And it's a wonderful event where we honor our sheriff's office people and our local police departments.
Folks, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters again. Thank you for staying with the show.
Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair is the transmission physician in the New Bern area. If you're experiencing transmission problems, call Charles Grover at 252-637-2399 or stop by the shop on 17 South in New Bern. Torque can install a new or reconditioned transmission, or they can rebuild your transmission if that's what you prefer. See Torque for a variety of minor automotive repairs like brakes, tune-ups, and water pump. You can count on Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair.
Hey folks, here's a tip. When you think firearms and ammo, think East 70 Palm. They've been on Highway 70 east of New Bern across from the fairgrounds for 31 years. Drew Preston and his staff know firearms. Gun sales have tripled in under a year, and women shooters are the fastest growing part of their business. Their great inventory, over 300 guns in stock, changes daily. And if you want something they don't have, they'll look for it. New and used, rifles, shotguns, and pistols, buy, sell, or trade. And they also have many holsters, scopes, and other gun accessories. Every member of the staff is deeply knowledgeable, and every one of them is an excellent shooter. So don't just come for the inventory. Come for the thoughtful advice. East 70 Palm, your home for firearms, ammo, and answers. Highway 70 East, New Bern, across from the fairgrounds.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in New Bern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swansboro, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
Thank you, folks, for listening to the sponsors and supporters. Now, where are we going right now? Chief, you got more that you wanted to add?
I want to talk about your budget.
Your budget.
So one of the areas that I'm very proud of is the fact that for the past 2.5 years, I have been promoting the virtues of ShotSpotter. ShotSpotter is a program. It's the ability to triangulate the sounds of gunfire in real time to identify where this is occurring.
So instant feedback.
Yes. Yeah, so 80 to 90% of all gunfire that is that occurs never is reported to law enforcement. So over the course of this 2.5-3 years. We had some tragic outcomes. We had a 19-month-old baby, Nealona Sheptock, who was killed during a gang drive-by shooting on July 4th of last year, and some other gang-related homicides. And Alderman Astor was kind enough to use his ARPA funds to help support ShotSpotter. We brought that program to the community. We went into Duffy Field. We spoke to the Greater Duffy Field Residents Council. We said we think this is a benefit. We want public support. As this project started to limp along, it started to gain momentum, and then we're sprinting, and next thing you know, we're signing a contract. And within a month and a half, we are fully active in our ShotSpotter. We've had at least 6 activations. We've made 4 arrests. We've recovered firearms, and we feel very strongly that this will provide that extra layer of security so that we can make our community safer.
What is the radius of this ShotSpotter?
So the SoundThinking is actually the parent company, and they offer this product in 1-mile increments. And after 1 mile, you can get them in half-mile increments after that. Every 1 mile, depending on the size of your jurisdiction or your community. And for us, New Bern, it is just south of $50,000 a year. So Greenville, which is a much larger community, pays more than we do because it's on a graduated scale based on the ability of the municipality to fund that.
So where do you have your microphones?
they are strategically located in the most needed location in New Bern. What we did was we took all of our ballistic and gunfire data throughout the entire city and say, where's that 1 square mile that's going to have the biggest impact? Because I'm here to tell you, I live in Taberna. Would I like to have ShotSpotter in my neighborhood? Sure. Nobody's shooting guns in Taberna. So it would be disingenuous to put that in any other place other than the most needed location.
You're not going to tell us where that is, are you?
No. Oh, no, I can tell you. It's in Duffy Field area, but I won't tell you where the exact lines are at.
All right.
But not only that, but if you had it in Taberna, you've got a lot of area that's county that you might have some hunters, and you might pick up a random hunter instead of an actual firearm.
Yeah, he's not looking for that. He's looking for places where gun crime occurs, and police departments know where all that is because they go back to that neighborhood over and over and over again, right?
Right. It's called evidence-based policing. You use the evidence that you have.
Excuse my ignorance. Where is Duffy Field?
Duffy Field is Craven Terrace and Trent Court.
Okay.
That area.
Okay.
And knowing some residents over there, they're very, very, very happy to have that coming in there.
So
the attention that they're getting, I'm
let me tell you the difference between Virginia Beach and New Bern from a guy that spent 31 years in Virginia Beach, and then I show up here. Although my family still lives there, my son owns a home in Chesapeake, my daughter owns a home in Virginia Beach, I have a lot of friends, but there's a fair number of people that just hated the police. We were not welcome in certain neighborhoods. It was a challenge. We had riots during the George Floyd summer of 2020, and it was a horrible time to be a police officer. I come to New Bern, and it took a long time before I met that first curmudgeonous, angry person. Even in Duffy Field and Craven Terrace, I get out of my car, I walk around, I talk to folks. They could not be nicer. They could not be more accommodating. It doesn't matter that we are of a different race or we are a different economic strata. It made no difference. In fact, one of the kindest people I've ever met in my life is a woman named Ethel Sampson.
Yes.
Yeah. We know Ethel.
She, I was here 2 weeks. I was introduced to her. She said, "Chief, would you come to my house? Would you come to my home?" And I said, "I'd be happy to." And she invited me into her home. She lives in a very modest home, and she, to this day, is a very dear friend of mine. I was with her yesterday. When is this going to air?
This Saturday. This Saturday.
I can't say. There's a special surprise for her, so I don't want to mention it. But
we all miss Johnny also.
Yes. And so she's a great representative of the people that I've met that had I been in Virginia Beach, I don't know if I would have felt the same way. And it's incredible to be around people that are tolerant. Now, they have legitimate concerns. They live in a place that is unsafe, and they just want to be safe. And they are aware of the history of policing in the South, and we all are, and we all should be, and be cognizant and sensitive of that. But they don't. Special Ethel and many others have been willing to say, "Chief, we'll give you the benefit of the doubt."
Have you had problems with people willing to be witnesses in criminal cases?
A huge problem with that. Very, very much. In fact, and I don't mean this. I was going to say it's funny you bring that up because it's not funny. The Neilani Sheptock murder, we held a press conference 2 days after the murder. And then we held a second press conference, and Ethel Sampson was so angry that she said, "I need to speak." And I said, I called her Mama Sampson. I said, "Mama Sampson, you want to talk? I'm stepping aside." And she chastised her community for their lack of support. And she says, "If Black Lives Matter," and I am paraphrasing this, but we've had this conversation many times, "if Black Lives Matter, that 19-month-old baby, her life mattered. And let's not forget that." And so she speaks truth to power. She speaks truth to, this culture of silence is complicity in and of itself of all future violence. We had 4 homicides last year, 2 of which were solved. And I believe we can solve the other 2, to include the Neilani Sheptock case. And I'm very optimistic we will have charges forthcoming. We had 1 homicide this year, which we have solved. But we need the community support.
Well, one thing I have to interject with Ethel, I mean, she's come to a lot of CCTA meetings, not recently, but over time. She's open to hearing the dialogue of everybody.
One of the things that just it infuriates me as a citizen of this great country, is that there was a time when a Ronald Reagan and a Tip O'Neill could be just politically opposed to each other but have mutual respect. We don't see that today. And we are seeing now where families can't even enjoy a dinner together because, you know, one is accusing the other of being a Nazi and all these other things. And the dialogue has created this divide that it's just horrible. And you're right. Ethel Sampson is a proud Democrat, and you know I support her and her thoughts. And we may not align politically, but you know that's the beauty of being in a free society. You should be able to advocate for your own beliefs and not accuse the other of being somehow lesser than you.
She supported the community. She's always supported the community. And we need to learn to get together, to put aside our differences, and do what's best for the community. Rather than screaming about our differences, let's find our common ground.
I'd just like to make a comment about how I think we could support law enforcement. And I think we've gotten away from this in some of the cities, northern cities, and it's really obvious. The best way to support law enforcement is to identify those people who are, I'm going to call them career criminals, and throw the book at them. They used to have a process. I mean, I've done a lot of assessments of people in my prior career about the risk of committing additional crimes. The number one factor was the number of prior crimes and their age. Those are the two most factors. And then you had some psychological issues also. But three-time loser laws, things like that, where the individuals who commit one crime, okay, a person can be wrong occasionally, but if you see two, three crimes, that person needs to be given the longest sentence possible, because all they're going to do is come out and commit more crimes. And that, I'm sure, is very frustrating for law enforcement to arrest these people and then, in a reasonable, some period of time, they're out again when they shouldn't be.
You're talking about a law like California's three strikes and you're out.
Yes.
That was the old law. Folks, we have a little over a minute to go. And so Mary, you want to throw in something right now? We've got about a minute to go.
This coming Tuesday at Stanley Hall Ballroom in New Bern, the public CCTA meeting will be at 7 o'clock. And our guest speaker is Ken Harper. Ken Harper has 18 years of experience in insurance and securities. He's the owner of an award-winning insurance firm. He's an ordained minister, a musician, and he has produced a play. He currently is the field director for former Congressman Mark Walker. In 2013, he founded the concept of Parent Support US, a service designed to reform the child support system. And what he is aiming to do is to make sure that the non-custodial parents' rights are recognized and that the law upholds the rights of both parents. He should be a very interesting speaker.
Chief, I want to thank you very much for joining us this show and for great conversations. Again, this is CCTA Wake Up Call. Have a great week.
People who learn to do something well and do it often get very good at it. Dr. Jay Singleton and his staff spend a lot of time removing cataracts, and they are good at it. Dr. Singleton has been doing a high volume of these procedures for 15 years. Let's face it, once we turn 50, the chances are we'll soon need cataract surgery. Fortunately, the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern, and the state-of-the-art Singleton Surgery Center is bringing costs down for patients and participating insurance companies. For dedication, experience, and convenience, you can trust the Singleton team. Dr. Jay Singleton and the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
CCTA Wake Up Call airs Saturday at 6 a.m., some days at 11 a.m. and 8 p.m. on WTKF 107.1.